Good afternoon, everyone. I trust you're having a wonderful day. The sun is shining in this little corner of the globe, so it's happy to see that after, gosh, was that snow we saw yesterday afternoon? Does it seem a little early in the year to be seeing snow in on the Avalon Peninsula? I think so, but anyway, there's lots of other people out there who are slapping their hands together in delight. And I have no issues with that whatsoever. Well, Halloween is soon upon us. The occasion is getting bigger than ever, as we all know. It's become a major commercial event, but its roots, like many of the key celebrations throughout the year, is based on the old Christian calendar, which, of course, adopted a lot of old pagan rituals. So while Halloween these days is focused more on horror and gore and scaring jump scares and all that sort of thing, I'm a little more of a purist. I prefer the spooky or ghostly aspects of the celebrations. My guest today is no stranger to the study of ritual, history, tradition, and a few spooky tales of his own. He is blogger, author, and intangible cultural heritage officer with Heritage Foundation of Newfoundland and Labrador, Dale Jarvis. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you too, and a big boo to you. where did the makings of Halloween all originate?
Oh, that's a very good and complicated question. So this time of year, as you said, in the Christian calendar, we're coming up to All Hallows Eve, or All Hallows Day, which is All Saints Day. And then we also have All Souls Day, which is November 2nd. You know, this is kind of a year-end celebration where we remember those who have gone on before us. We remember the departed. And it's also a time in other calendars, you know, in the Irish traditional calendar, this is around the time of Samhain, which is one of the kind of sacred holidays in the pre-Christian calendar. So yeah, lots of things to talk about and think about this time of year.
So I suppose that's where all the spookiness came from, is because we are traditionally honoring those who have passed before us. So it's about death and passing on and life after death and those kinds of things. Is that what sort of sparked all this spookiness?
Yeah, I think so. And I think over time, certainly the holiday has gotten a lot spookier and a lot more commercialized, as you've said. I think now after Christmas, it is the holiday that we in North America spend the most money on. And you only have to look at people's front lawns driving around and seeing all the elaborate Halloween decorations that you see out, which seem to get larger and larger every year.
Has it been recognized in Newfoundland and Labrador tradition for very long?
There are Halloween type traditions that go back you know, easily over 100 years. I think the kind of modern ish Halloween where we think of kids trick or treating is relatively new. But if we look back, say, at the newspaper accounts 100 years ago, there were often references to Halloween. In some of our more Irish communities, we would talk about Cold Cannon Night, which would be the 31st of October. And Colcannon refers both to the night itself, but also the dish that was served around that time of year. And it's basically you take all your root vegetables, your potatoes and your parsnips and whatever, and you kind of mash them together in a casserole. It's kind of a baked casserole dish. And certain communities like Tilting on Fogo Island, Colcannon Night was continued up right up until fairly recently. I know the Tilting Expatriates Association until very recently had a Colcannon Night supper here in St. John's.
Now, a lot of my roots are in Conception Bay North, of course, and you didn't have to scratch the surface very far talking to some of the older folks in particular before you got a real humdinger of a ghost story. We're very good at telling our ghostly tales. Do we have a lot of them?
We do, and it's one of the great things about my work around ghost stories is that they never seem to run out. I'm always hearing new tales. Part of that is that we have this long tradition of storytelling and telling ghostly stories in Newfoundland, but it's also one of those things that adapts well to modern circumstances. So we're hearing new ghost stories as they come out. I remember when I started collecting stories, 25 years ago, I was hearing stories about haunted fax machines, which now seems like an antique kind of story. But at the time, it was very modern. Everyone had a fax machine, and people were talking about, we have a haunted fax machine in our office. It would get strange messages from the dead. And I think, as technology changes, we see now ghost stories and spooky stories getting shared and created on the internet. So it is one of these great things that is both contemporary and historical at the same time.
It's an evolution.
It is, absolutely. That's one of the things that folklorists love about traditions, is that we think of traditions as being unchanging, but really they do adapt very quickly sometimes. And our holidays, the way we celebrate them now, is not necessarily how we celebrated them in the past. And this year is a really great example, because everyone's having to kind of rethink Halloween and what do we do on Halloween in this age that we're living in this year.
Might be a time to get back to some of the basics, sitting around that campfire or the fireplace with the lights off and telling those ghostly tales. Before we go to break now, I'm going to give you a little heads up. I want you to think on some of your favorite ghost tales. And when we come back, I'll be quizzing you on those. Stay tuned for that. Our guest today is a cultural heritage officer with Heritage Foundation of Newfoundland and Labrador, Dale Jarvis. We'll be back right after this. A heads up to our listeners, a little later on in the show, we'll give you an opportunity to win a book by none other than my guest today, Dale Jarvis. He's a blogger and author. He's also the Intangible Cultural Heritage Officer with the Heritage Foundation of Newfoundland and Labrador. And Dale, this area of the world does have a long tradition of hauntings, paranormal incidents, and strange creatures. What are some of your favorite tales?
Well, I think you introduced it well when you said heads up, because headless ghosts are obviously one of my favorite things. Lots of people probably are familiar with the famous Ichabod Crane and the Headless Horseman, that famous story out of the United States. But we have lots of headless ghosts all across Newfoundland and Labrador. Many of them are associated with pirate stories and stories of pirate treasure. And one of my favorite ones is actually a Labrador story. There is a pirate story associated with the famous pirate Captain Kidd, who was said to have buried a treasure at Red Bay in Labrador. And there is a large hill that kind of overlooks Red Bay and the harbor called Tracy Hill. And at the very top of that hill, there is a pond. And these days, there's a lovely boardwalk and wooden stairs. You can climb up to the very top of Tracy Hill. And when I was there several years ago, there was even an interpretive plaque that told this story about how Captain Kidd had sailed into the harbor and had decided that Red Bay was as good a place as any to hide his treasure, made his men carry it up to the top of the hill. And then once it was kind of buried, this pond was created, and the captain called over one of his men, and before the man knew what was happening, cut off his head and threw his body in so that he would remain as a ghostly guardian for this treasure. And the local legend goes on to say that there were some local men from a nearby community called Carroll's Cove, which is now a resettled village. They decided they were going to go up to the pond on the hill and drain the pond and rescue this treasure for themselves. So they went up one night and they were starting to do this work, bailing out the pond, and a terrible, terrible storm whipped up all of a sudden with incredible thunder and lightning flashing all around them. And the men were deeply superstitious, and they were convinced that the headless ghost was prowling around and was showing its displeasure in this display of lightning. And so they left, and the pond remains undrained, and the treasure, as far as we know, still might be there, guarded by a headless ghost at the top of Tracy Hill.
We also seem to have a tradition of highway or pathway walkers.
Oh, yeah. Lots of stories about people meeting strange people on the path. One of my favorite stories is from Trinity Bay, about a man who was walking along the path, and he looked back along the path, and there was a man far off in the distance, kind of walking in the same direction. And he thought, I'll just stop here. There was a little spring where he could stop and get some water. He said, I'll just stop and have a drink here, and I'll wait for this stranger to catch up, because, you know, a companion makes a journey shorter. We can tell stories along the way. And so the stranger was quite a ways in the distance, and the man went down to scoop some water out of this spring. And when he looked down into the water, he saw his own reflection, but then behind him could see the face of another person. And he looked up, and here was the man right behind him that had been all that distance back along the path. And he looked up at this stranger, and the stranger smiled a smile that spread from ear to ear, and then his jaw dropped down to reveal row upon row of sharp little teeth. And our hero in the story fell over into the pond, and when he got up, the mysterious smiling stranger was gone, and he never walked that path alone ever again.
I just got goosebumps.
Good, then I'm doing my job.
But there seems to be a lot of those types of things, you know, those silent strangers you meet on the path and you turn and they're gone.
And they turn and they're gone, yeah. The other one that is fairly common in a way is that someone will meet someone they know on the path, or they think they know on the path. So if I was walking along, I might meet you on the path, and then you might vanish. And then when I got home, you know, I might go over to your house and say, you know, were you just on the path, and you're there, you know, fixing your boots or something. And seeing this double of someone was always seen as a token, a warning that that person was about to die. And lots of Newfoundland stories about someone meeting someone on the path and then that person passing away very shortly thereafter.
We have a tradition here too of strange creatures, and you teased this in tweeting out earlier today about an urban legend called about something called the Weber. What is the Weber?
The Weber. The Weber is one of these amazing local urban legends. And if you grew up on kind of the east side of Newfoundland, maybe you've never heard of the Weber. But if you grew up in western Newfoundland, especially if you grew up in the 70s or 80s or 90s, and you went to summer camp anywhere between, say, Stephenville and Pasadena, chances are you heard of the Weber. And Weber is this very frightening creature that lives in the woods of western Newfoundland. The story was that a child was born that had sort of strange webbed claw-like hands, and the parents were so horrified by this children that they left the child in the wood. Some versions of the story say they threw the child off the end of the wharf to get rid of it, and the child did not die but grew up in the woods with these clawed webbed hands, and angry, like you would be if you were abandoned by your parents in the woods as a baby, developed this unnatural hunger for a human flesh, and would creep through the night and would often kind of try to steal away teenagers out, you know, making out in cars, or campers who had wandered away from their tents. It was a tale that really spread around through all the summer camps on the West Coast. And it has all these great little regional variations. And lots of people, if they grew up on the West Coast, will remember with great dread, this feeling of having to, go to the outhouse or something if you were at camp in the middle of the night because you were afraid the Weber would be waiting to spring upon you and eat you up.
It strikes me as you're talking that a lot of cultures seem to have these snatching people type of legends, the Flying Dutchman, the Boogeyman, even Santa Claus to an extent, that somebody is watching you, and if you don't behave, you're going to get it.
Yeah, when we look at contemporary legends, urban legends, there's usually something that someone has done wrong. So in the case of the Weber story, if there are these teenagers making out in a car, which they really shouldn't be doing, terrible things, then they kind of invite this punishment upon them. So sometimes they're almost like moral tales. If you are bad, the Weber will get you, or you'll get coal in your stocking at Christmas, one or the other.
So we used to call them ghost stories one time. Now we call them urban legends. Is that part of the evolution itself?
I think so. Though, I mean, ghost stories are very specifically about ghosts, and urban legends or contemporary legends, which is what folklorists call them, they deal with all kinds of things that may or may not be supernatural. There's all those stories about, the hook man, which is a really common one, about this man with a hook who's escaped from some institution. And again, the young lovers are out in the car and they can hear this kind of hook, scraping along the side of the car, and they drive off in a hurry. And then when they stop, here is the man's hook still hanging from the from the car door handle. So some of them are just these frightening stories, and they're often presented as being true stories. This happened to a friend of a friend of mine, we still continue to tell those stories. Lots of one that's really popular with young girls, for various reasons, I think, is about Bloody Mary. This, where you look in the mirror, and if you say Bloody Mary a certain number of times, Bloody Mary will appear behind you in the mirror, and dire things might happen.
Yeah, you didn't want to mess with Bloody Mary.
No.
She could cause you some real trouble. Are some places more haunted than others?
Yes. And I think that this applies both to, kind of narrow locations within a community. I know in St. John's, for example, there seems to be an area down kind of at the bottom of Long's Hill, that area where Theater Pharmacy and Gower Street United Church are. There were two different cemeteries there at one point, both of which are gone now. But that little area right there, I seem to collect a number of very strange stories from that area, Livingston Street and Long's Hill and Queens Road, lots of creepy stories from there. And then there are certain regions in the province where there are lots of ghost stories, that ghost stories seem to cluster. You were talking about Conception Bay. Conception Bay is a great home to all kinds of stories about the ghosts and the Hollies and fairies and all kinds of other things.
So what are the Hollies?
The Hollies are, if anyone is familiar with the area around Northern Bay Sands, there is a story there that there was a number of fishing vessels that were out in Conception Bay when a hurricane came up. And many, many fishermen perished in this hurricane, and their bodies were all kind of washed up on the shore. And not knowing which communities they came from, they were buried in a mass grave. And it is said that at certain times of year, or maybe before a storm, you will hear the howling of these drowned fishermen. And locals call it the Hollies. And it's become such such a fixed part of the Newfoundland kind of local sayings, Newfoundland vernacular English, that if you look up in the Dictionary of Newfoundland English, one of my favorite books, If you look up the Hollies, it's actually kind of entered into our local language as meaning a kind of ghost, usually the ghost of a wailing, weeping, drowned fisherman.
So more wailing and less bus stop wet day, she's there, I say. Please share yeah. my umbrella. Jack-o'-lanterns, is that not a holly?
Jack-o'-lanterns are, I guess it depends who you talk to. Jack-o'-lanterns occupy this kind of weird space because they might be a ghost. They might be a fairy creature. They might be something else. They kind of are a thing unto their own, and they go by a variety of different names. So some people will talk about Jack-o'-lanterns. Some people will call the light Jack the lantern, or a will-o'-the-wisp or something else. In ages ago in kind of St. John's and in Conception Bay, they were called corpse candles. And these are these little flickering bits of light that will appear and wander around. And if you follow that little dying candle of light or little glowing lamplight in the distance, you might get led into a terrible situation. You might get led into a bog hole or off a cliff or into the woods, never to be seen again. And lots of people have seen Jack-o'-lanterns. And they are related in a way to the modern Jack-o'-lantern. You know, we carve these pumpkins and we put a little light in it to remind us of this story at this time of year. And I think most people have kind of forgotten that the origins of the Jack-o'-lanterns that we have are based in these kind of supernatural stories about these strange ghostly lights.
Dale Jarvis is my guest today on Target St. John's. When we come back, we'll hear more ghostly tales and paranormal experiences here in Newfoundland and Labrador coming up right after this. And we're back. Halloween is just around the corner. This is becoming a tradition now on Target St. John's that we bring in Dale Jarvis to talk a little bit about Halloween and spooky tales, because he's gathered quite a few in his career. And you were talking about will-o'-the-wisps and Jack-o'-lanterns and those lights that you see over the bog and on beaches and those kinds of things. And not unusual, though, because when you think about it scientifically, phosphorus does illuminate.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of, you know, scientific, rational explanations for some of these things. You know, people talk about marsh gas and phosphorescence, and, you know, there's all kinds of phosphorescent life in the sea and whatnot. Those explanations aren't nearly as fun this time of year.
No, indeed. Let's ignore it altogether. Let's ignore all the scientific proof.
Exactly. give us a week where we can just enjoy a spooky story. Yeah.
Exactly. Tokens are a big thing in Newfoundland and Labrador. We've always had this tradition of tokens.
Yes. So a token, which goes by different words in other parts of the world. I was talking to a class of students in Nova Scotia a little while ago, and we were talking about tokens. They call them forerunners or fetches, and this is where you get some kind of warning that something terrible is about to occur. Someone close to you or in your family has either just died or that their death is about to occur. And these can take a whole variety of different forms, some of them more dramatic or spooky than others. One thing that, you know, older kind of folklore in the Newfoundland is if a bird was to fly into your house, that would be a sign that someone was going to die. That probably happened more when we didn't have screens on our windows. But yeah, this idea that a bird coming into the house, that was a symbol that someone would die. One of the more dramatic ones is people getting three knocks on the door and then going to the door and finding no one there. And I think this is probably made even more dramatic in the days when people really didn't use their front doors that much. You know, you would get three knocks at the front door, the kind of the formal entrance to the house, and you would go and open the door expecting to find a stranger, and there would be no one there. A few years ago, a woman told me a story about that from Buckens, about how there had been three knocks at the door, and when they went and answered the door, there was no one there, and they knew that someone had died in the mine. And sure enough, a little while later, one of the mine supervisors came up to say that this relative of the family had unfortunately been killed in a mine accident, and the family already knew because of these three token knocks on their front door.
Ghosts are sometimes, kind of spooky and spectral and something to be wary of. And in other cases, they are actually quite comforting if you believe you know who it might be sending you a signal, I suppose, from beyond or giving you comfort at a difficult time. They're not always spooky, are they?
No, not always. And you know, when I hear stories from Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, the majority of the ghost stories that I hear are not really the Hollywood terrifying head spinning around kind of ghost stories. They're more about someone reaching out to them from beyond and making contact in some way. And sometimes that might be, you know, a person appearing, like visually, like an actual ghostly encounter. But then other people will say, in my family, there's a little story about pansies, like little pansy flowers, which will pop up in the garden. And someone will say, oh, that's so-and-so. Letting us know that she's still kind of around, or a certain type of bird might appear at a certain time, and people will say, "Oh, that's grandmother" or something like that. Lots of people have stories like that, and in a way, it is very comforting. You know, this idea that we can still communicate, and the departed can communicate with us. People do take great comfort from that.
In our family, we have a tradition that we all know what the sign is that Pop is thinking about us or is around us at that particular time, and we all find that very comforting. He was a big iconic figure in our family, very loving and very caring over his family, and there are little signs that we have within our extended family, and we share it on Facebook. We'll share the picture of this thing that it is that reminds us of Pop all the time, and each one of us will say, you know, he did that to me this week too, you know, that kind of thing.
So yeah,
it is very comforting, I have to say. Well, I'm getting this one now from Jerry Lynn Mackey, our VOCM Morning Show co-host, and she was raising a very interesting point here. She says, sometimes in older homes, when you tear down the walls, you will find signs within the house that people had built in to ward off evil spirits. And I think this is something that goes right back to the British Isles, because I know that they've been doing that in there for many, many eons. Is that something you see a lot here too?
We don't see it a lot in Newfoundland, but it certainly does happen. And I've come across that. Sometimes I think when people are renovating old houses, they might find something stuck between the walls and they think, oh, that just fell down from the rafters or something. And they throw it out. They don't know what they've found. Some of my heritage colleagues in Nova Scotia actually started a database of all these things that have been found. One of the more common things there to be found were old shoes. Shoes would often be kind of boarded up inside walls and to serve as kind of a magical charm. So they had this collection of all these shoes that they found. Here in Newfoundland and Labrador, one of the most interesting or gruesome examples of this that I know of is on display, or it has been on display at the Rooms, the museum in St. John's, and that was a rat. A cat was put inside the wall of a house and then kind of sealed up. And so you can go and you can see this animal, that was preserved inside the walls of the house. I know in some communities on the Burren Peninsula, horseshoes. We talk about horseshoes being good luck, and we were often familiar with them being nailed above a doorway, but sometimes they were actually nailed inside the frame of a house to act as protection against, you know, witchcraft, dark magic, or evil spirits of some kind.
Someone, a listener, just sent me this. He says, I don't really believe in ghosts, but when I was a small boy growing up in an old two-story home, I sometimes clearly heard footsteps in the hallway in the middle of the night when everyone was supposed to be asleep. He says, I'm not joking. It was very frightening. I still can't explain it. We had tiles on the hallway floor, he says, and the footsteps would get louder and louder as it sounded like someone was walking quickly towards the bedroom door. And just when it sounded like they were at the door, it would suddenly stop. He said, it really scared me at the time. Do you get a lot of sound within the house?
Yeah, spooky sounds. You know, we were having a conversation last night. The Storytelling Festival was doing an online storytelling session, and Karis Cotter, who's one of our great ghost story authors in the province, was telling this story about the old hag. And quite often the old hag is associated with noises. Sometimes we don't even see the old hag, but we'll get this sense, or we'll hear footsteps coming closer and closer and closer, and or quicker, moving quicker and quicker and quicker towards us. Sometimes what we're actually hearing is maybe even our own heartbeat, but we're still kind of half asleep and we don't really know what's going on. But yeah, these kind of auditory hallucinations or auditory, you know, things that we experience that aren't necessarily visual. But we associate creepy noises with haunted houses. There was a house, I think, in either in Portugal Cove or Conception Bay South, that was rumored to be haunted, and people would hear this ghostly moaning coming from the house. And so the house was vacant, and no one wanted to buy this house because everyone knew it was haunted. And someone eventually bought the house and then started to renovate it and found inside the wall a saw blade. In certain weather conditions, the blade would vibrate in a certain way and make this moaning sound. So the ghost was explained, and the owner was quite happy, but the rest of the community still believed that the house was haunted, even though it had sort of been debunked.
Well, you are going to be part of a first here on Target St. John's. We're going to do a little giveaway. You are also an author, of course, and you've compiled quite a few interesting tales from this province in On This Day, 365 Days of History, Mystery, and More. Give us a little hint now of what we can expect from this book, maybe for this date.
Okay, so the book is a collection of stories that happened on the day. So there's 365 stories, one story for every day of the year, and so you can go and discover what interesting, unusual thing happened on this day in Newfoundland history. So today is October 29th, and on October 29th in 1896, there was this interesting news item that was reported in the paper about these two ladies, Mrs. Bryan and a woman by the name of Aggie Mearns, who lived on Springdale Street, which is where our Heritage Foundation office is, right there at the bottom of Springdale Street. They were walking down the street at about midnight, and as they reached the intersection with George Street, which is where the new Salvation Army building has just gone up there, Aggie gave a great scream and fainted dead away. She was carried to a nearby house, and she regained consciousness, told a frightening tale. She had seen the form of a woman from the neighborhood who had been buried 1 week before, who had raised up a ghostly hand towards her in a threatening manner. Aggie was badly frightened and said she would not venture out after dark again for fear of beholding the ghost of George and Springdale. So if you live kind of in the west end of St. John's, that's something to think about tonight. If you drive down Springdale or George Street, you might see this ghostly woman raising her hand in a menacing fashion.
You're freaking me out here today. So what we're going to do now, we're going to go to our commercial break. And during the commercial break, we're going to open up our lines. The numbers to call, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. And we're going to take caller number 5. Carrie Hodder is going to take your information. You don't come up to the station to get this book. What we're going to do is get your contact information. We'll give out your name on the air so you know you won. We're going to take your contact information. We're going to pass that on to Dale, and he's going to get the fine folks at Flanker to send it along to you. So it's On This Day, 365 Tales of History, Mystery, and More. We're going to open up the lines now. Once again, the number is 273-5211, 1-888-590-8626. Caller number 5 will get that book. And we have a winner, Sheila Edwards of Marystown. Congratulations. You have just won the book by Dale Jarvis, On This Day, 365 Tales of History, Mystery, and More. Dale, give us another little, I don't know, something that you love telling, a story you love telling that's spooky. Is he there? Hello? Okay, we seem to have having a technical difficulty now. So once again, Sheila Edwards of Marystown is our winner for the book on this day, 365 Tales of History, Mystery, and More. And let's see now. Carrie, what's going on? Have we got Mr. Jarvis back with us yet? Oh, okay. All right. So that's the book. And Dale has been sharing it with us. We just had a little technical problem there when we put the lines back on hold because we had quite a few calls. And thank you, everyone, for contributing, by the way, to that. It's nice to know that people are listening intently and are most interested in this book. I have a copy of it, by the way. It's very interesting. I don't happen to have it in front of me now, unfortunately. If I did, I would be sharing some of the contents of that particular book. But it is fascinating to go through the calendar on a daily basis and just to see all these little tidbits that Dale has collected over the years and through local newspapers and such, trying to get, little snippets of history. I remember one about a couple of young fellows up on Signal Hill who were getting into a bit of mischief, and unfortunately, that they met their end that way. I think we've reestablished contact with Dale Jarvis. Hello.
Hello.
The ghost in the machine.
Yes, the goblins got us. Well, I'm back.
So I just wanted to, before we end our show this afternoon, I was going to say this morning, but it's this afternoon, share another little favorite tale that you have, because you're not doing your usual haunted hikes this year because of COVID. Is that correct?
No, we're not. But we have to kind of reinvent this holiday. So I'm actually doing something with the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra. Their Halloween Spooktacular is happening on the 30th tomorrow night, and people can tune in and listen to a bunch of spooky tales with them there. And one of the great things about it was we got to film parts of it down at the Anglican Cathedral, which, it is rumored, has a ghost, and has in the museum of the Anglican Cathedral this famous ghostly photograph. And here is this photograph that's looking from Duckworth Street up at the cathedral as it was when the photo was taken in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And the story is that when the workmen were done working on rebuilding the cathedral after the Great Fire, they had their photo taken. And the story is that one of these workers had died. And when you look at the line of workmen, there's one workman at the very end of this line who is more transparent than the rest of them. And people said that he rejoined his co-workers to get his photo taken on their final day of work. And the photograph is there. You can go down to the cathedral when it's open and see it for yourself.
Of course, the cathedral has the crypts, too.
Yeah, the least frightening crypt, you will ever visit. A lovely spot to go for tea and biscuits in the summer. But yeah, just amazing history. Lots of great history. And one of my favorite old tombstones, well, one of my favorite old headstones is also in the Cathedral Museum. Belonged to a woman by the name of Mary Stowe. And it is one of these few headstones that we have that is really kind of that classic, haunted house looking headstone with the death's head on the top of it, the grinning skull, which we don't see that often in Newfoundland cemeteries.
Some grave markers, some of the older ones in particular, used to issue, I guess, little warnings to the living.
Yeah, well, they were that we have this phrase that they're called memento mori, and they served as reminders that all this shall pass, that this is what awaits every one of us, and quite often death symbolism was very common on tombstones. So you would see things like hourglasses with the time running out, or scythes or sickles that would be carried by the Grim Reaper to cut your life short. These days, our cemetery motifs that we see are a lot friendlier. I was up in Cape Royal over the summer at the New Roman Catholic Cemetery, and lots of bingo cards on headstones there. The afterlife looks a lot friendlier on those headstones.
Well, indeed, you see fishing boats and cats gifts and yeah, all kinds of things that meant something to the person who had passed.
Absolutely, yeah. Our headstones are becoming much more personalized. You know, we used to have kind of a limited number of images that would appear on headstones, and now they can be very, very personal. I know there was one in a cemetery we were doing some heritage work on, St. Francis of Assisi in Logie Bay, Middle Cove, Outer Cove, and the man who had died, on his headstone was the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon logo, which I thought was fantastic. You knew exactly what he enjoyed in life.
Absolutely. You got to love a Pink Floyd fan. Is death more sanitized for us now? There used to be one time we used to fear it would be around the corner at any time. Of course, we've lived through plagues and all of that sort of thing. We're living through one now. Is death a little more accepted, or are we a little more distanced from it now?
I think we're a little more distanced from it than our ancestors were, certainly. You know, these days, very few people die at home. Most people die in a hospital. Maybe that's why we don't have as many haunted house stories anymore, because, you know, people were always, attending wakes in people's homes before the introduction of funeral parlors. That's where wakes and funerals were held. I think our relationship with death is a little more sanitized these days. But at the same time, I think there's a bit of a return back. More people are wishing to die at home. We're seeing more things like green burials, you know, people wrapped in burial shrouds like they once were. We kind of live in an interesting time when it comes to how we look at and celebrate our lives and death around in our community.
I can remember one story within our own family about a rocking chair that belonged to a loved one that used to rock. And yes. That several people had, you know, passed that rocker around, and finally it was abandoned and I think forever lost. But a lot of people say, no, I never have that rocker back in my house. It used to rock late at night. It would carry the, I guess, spirit of the person who sat in it.
Yes. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, we have a great tradition of haunted objects as well. And I know I own an object that a little cream pitcher that belonged to a favorite aunt. And it was said to be strangely haunted, that it would kind of appear and disappear and reappear in different places in the house. But so far it stayed where it is.
So you're doing this project with the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra. How can people take that in?
They can go to, I think it's nsomusic.ca. If you are on social media, just look for the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra. And what will be happening is a series of family-friendly ghost stories, nothing too gruesome. So you can gather around the virtual campfire, listen to some music from the NSO, and hear me tell some not too creepy, but fun ghost stories for kids and families.
Indeed, we need to get more as the nights lengthen now and we have more idle time because of COVID. We need to get more of those gatherings around the fireplace and share those tales.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of people sharing stories. I always tell students when they're working on projects and they come to me looking for stories, I always say, go ask your grandparents and your aunties and your uncles and your neighbors, because there are ghost stories and strange stories out in your community. And we need to share those to keep those tales alive.
Indeed. Dale Jarvis, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good, happy Halloween.
Same to you. And we'll be taking that NSO event in tomorrow for sure. Join us tomorrow. We're going to be talking about the tourism industry, how it's been impacted and how it plans to rebound. We'll be talking to a tourism operator, somebody who's involved in tours and that sort of thing. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening.